phone with?
I don't know if it's working for you. It didn't sound like it was.
Okay, okay. First of all, I'd like to thank the government staff for one more day clean. And thank the Central Maryland for allowing me to be here today and participate in the convention. You know what I mean? And Central Maryland is the area where I got connected at. You know, and I think getting connected is a very integral part of my recovery. You know, if I'm not being connected with people, that means I'm still going through the same thing I came here with. You know, outwardly, man, when I first got here, man, everything appeared to me, man, that I was disconnected from life, from the world. You know, when I take a look at my story at the end of the road and sleeping in abandoned houses up on 58th, next to the stems and the needles, going in and out of prison since I was 15 years old, my ex-wife pulling up on Central Avenue, crying, talking about, Dan, look what you're doing to yourself. Can you please get in the car, right? And I'm kind of like talking about, man, it's being so disconnected and being locked in obsession and compulsion, right? I couldn't leave. You know, that was the outwardly part, man, that was real clear and evident when I first got here. You know, and the disease of addiction, man, it works from within. You know, I was born, man, in a single-parent home, man, my mother, my grandmother, stuff like that. And I was instilled with morals, values, and principles. You know, but somehow, man, you know, when you grow up with a whole bunch of fear, man, low self-esteem, man, the disease will move all that shit right out the way. You know, my mother, she was 14 years old. We grew up over West Baltimore, man, and bushes was fashionable then and shit like that, right? And I used to always get the bald head and shit like that, man. I remember the kids walking to me, excuse me, Roger, and squeezing my head and saying, Dana Bean, Dana Bean. So what I'm kind of like talking about, man, early on, man, one thing I used, man, to get me outside myself, man, was my anger. You know, because it was always the inability, man, to deal with life on life's terms, man, right? When I used that anger, it kind of like kept people off my back. And I kind of like remember, man, walking to get my penny candy in the morning and stuff like that, and I was always feeling shame and guilty that I had lunch tickets and shit like that. I always felt less than. You dig? And I remember going to get my penny candy and shit like that, man. It was always them kids, man, that was posted up in front of the store, you know, trying to muster for your penny candy and shit like that, man. And there was a whole bunch of fear there, you know, and I was trying to project this image. So I remember, man, before I went to school in the morning, I would look in the mirror and develop this look. Right? And what I'm kind of like getting to, right, is disconnecting yourself from self. It's like a whole bunch of self-hate, man. Once you kill your name, Dean, right, and create a cartoon character in your name, in your mind, in the name of Faith. You know? And I remember kind of like, man, standing at the bottom of the corner, man, back in the day, man, I was watching the guys, man. They were selling dope. They had the Benzes, the Jaguars, and the jewelry on all the fine women and stuff like that, man. And I stood at the bottom of Reisterstown Road, man, I watched some dope, right? And the first thing I used, man, to get me outside myself was my imagination. You know? And I kind of like remember trying to chase this dream, man, this illusion, and trying to sell drugs and shit like that, man, and once I started using drugs, man, with the disease of addiction, man, getting caught up in obsession and compulsion, right, and what I quickly find out that a monkey can't sell no bananas. You know. And I remember, man, going to prison, man, and I said, man, I'm going to do the geographical thing, man, and I remember moving out my aunt's house and shit like that, you know, and I remember getting involved in a relationship, man. But the deal is, man, I take me, man, wherever I go. The disease, man, is centered in my thinking, you know, and going in and out of prison and shit like that, man. And I remember the last time I went to prison, man, I was locked up for a little while, man, and we beat this boy up real bad, y'all. And it was the first time in my gut that I ever felt shame and guilt. So I went back to my cell, man, after we done, you know, and I prayed, you know, I was like, God, can you please help me be a different person when I get out of here? You know, and I got out of prison, man, they released me. And the first thing I done, I wasn't used, right? And I stayed out there for 5 days, man, and I was walking up 4th Street, man. I was smoking a stem, right? and a guy looked like Ned DeWino called me a crackhead. He said, look at you, you crackhead. I said, damn. You mean to tell me this motherfucker like Ned DeWino called you a crackhead? But it was the first time, man, I didn't get mad. I took a look at myself, man. I kind of like inventory myself, man, right there. And I started asking my questions like, Dean, what's your fixed address? Where you got to go at? You know, any hallway, any abandonment in my career, that's my head at. You know, what's your hopes, dreams, and aspirations? I couldn't think of any. You know, and I remember, man, going to detox, man, and I walked in there, man. I had the jail commissary sweatpants on and the jail commissary sweatshirt. You know what I mean? I had some Tim's, man. I was rocking side to side, right? You know, and the nurses was there, right? And I had to take my shoes off. And when I untied my shoes, man, right, the nurse smelled my feet. She said, God damn, baby. Don't you worry about a thing. We're going to get your ass some help. So from there, man, they moved me out in Howard County, man, close to PG County, close to Anne Arundel County, man, you know what I mean, to a treatment facility, man. I started going to meetings and stuff like that, man. And I'm going to tell you, you know, where I come from is like being locked up. You eat with your own, you go to the yard with your own, you only hang with your own. You know, when you hang on the corner, you only hang with your own. I'm kind of talking about, man, being caught up in isolation, right? So when I came out here, man, in Howard County, PG County, shit like that, man, I wasn't accustomed to diversity. You know, and I remember coming to a meeting, man. I was down in Savage, Maryland and shit, man, and there was a whole bunch of guys, man, walking around with ponytails and shit, you know, pulling up in Harley Davidson's, boom, boom, right? And the disease, I'm just kind of like telling you about, man, how my thinking is fucked up. You know, and, you know, it was like, what the fuck is this shit? You know, motherfuckers ain't run up on me hugging me probably because I was looking like this. So I remember emphatically, man, raising my hand in the middle of the meeting and sharing, right? I said, man, I don't like none of you motherfuckers. And the room got real quiet and some people looked funny and stuff like that. But at the end of the meeting, man, my good friend said, Dean, would you like to pass out the key tags? And I'm sitting here thinking as he asked me that I want to pass out the key tags, I'm like, this crazy ass shit that you just shared. The way you look, they still ain't throw you out the meeting, man. They still embracing you and getting you in service. What I'm kind of like trying to get to, right, is they didn't judge my desire to stay clean. You know, I remember, man, getting 90 days clean and stuff like that. I walked up there to get my key tags, man. They was out of key tags, and I had a resentment with the GSR. Right? I said, where this motherfucker at? Motherfucker don't know I'm getting 90 days a day, he ain't got no key tags. So I wanted to get the key tags, they ran out of key tags, right? And this old biker guy, right? He limped all the way across, man, to the house I was staying at, the recovery house at that point, right? He came, man, he gave me a hug. He said, Dean, I love you, brother, please keep coming back. And he held me, he embraced me, man, and he gave me his personal key tag, right? And what I'm kind of like talking about, man, was my first spiritual experience. I started to understand, man, how God was working through people, man. I didn't know who he was going to work through. You know, I started becoming open-minded, man, and open for relationships. Because I think the one thing that's real important to me is the same thinking that said, Dean, it's okay to go outside your grandmother's house and sell wax may not keep you clean. You know, the same thinking that thought jail was a vacation resort may not keep you clean, right? So I'm kind of like talking about, man, developing relationships with people, man. You know what I mean? And the sponsor, man, I ran into this old lady, man. She, you know, I was disconnected from my mother and stuff like that, man. And this old lady became like my mother. You know, we would ride to the grocery store together. We would walk hands and talk in the park. right? I would share things with her, stuff like that, and she would say, Cookie, go pray. You know what I mean? And I'm kind of like talking about is developing a relationship with God and my understanding. Starting a connection. You dig? See, the thing is, man, I could be going to meetings, right, and still be disconnected. You know, once your sponsor start calling you and the conversation get real shallow. Dean, what's going on? I'm all right. You know, and once I get locked and loaded on something other than a message, you know, and I kind of remember getting into this relationship, right, and, you know, my thinking was like, you know, Dean, she fried chicken good, she got a nice ass, move the whole family in. It sounded like a good idea to me. Yeah. And, you know, the pain started outweighing the pleasure. You know, and I remember sharing it with my sponsor, right? And it was like, we're going to take a moment of silence. He said, well, you didn't done this shit now. The best thing we can do is work with it. You know, and what I'm kind of like talking about, man, is how the disease don't really need no crack to kill my ass. Right? What I'm kind of like talking about, man, is how I would get locked and loaded on situations, man. Right? You know, locked and loaded. Who's she fucking? What's she doing? Who's she doing? And how quickly, man, I could turn a temporary feeling to a permanent problem. So, once I got grounded, man, I started to understand, man, the road of recovery is ever paved with pain or surrender. If I'm going to keep fighting and stay pained up, right, or I'm going to surrender and turn my will and my life over to the God of my understanding, right? You know, and even in doing this, man, and turning my will and my life over, man, I started getting a whole lot freer. You know, and in this relationship, man, that's my son came out of it. You know, and when my son was born, man, you know, it's my only child, man. Anybody know me, man, they know how tight me and my son is. That's my motherfucking man, right? And when he was born with his knot on his head, man. It was coming out of the skull. You know, and a lot of days, man, I would get imbalanced, man, and, you know, I would cry sometimes, man, and when we had doctor appointments, man, the doctor didn't tell me what I wanted to hear. I'd be ready to slap the doctor. What I'm kind of talking about is being emotionally imbalanced. Because I didn't know what that shit was in my son, man's skull. Being fearful. You know, and you know, I had to step my prayer life up, man, and I'm kind of like talking about getting the connection to the Creator. I stepped my prayer life up, man, and my prayers was like, God, if you please let my son be healthy, I'd be the best dad I could possibly be. You know? And I've been on vacation this week, man, and my son been with me all week. You know, he came out fine, and every day this week, man, he would get out of his bed, run into my room, man, and lay on my chest, and give me a kiss, man, and hug me and say, Daddy, I love you. You know, that's some of the things, man, that you can't buy around here, man. You know, I learned to be real patient with my son, man, because I understood, man, how it was when I was coming up. You know, you stupid, you retarded, you can't do the questions right, you know. And that covered up with low self-esteem, man, it kind of like held me hostage. You know, as I conveyed to y'all earlier, man, I've been locked up in a whole bunch of different places, man, but the worst place I've been locked up was in my own mind. You know? And thank God for sponsorship, man. You know what I mean? Because it enabled me to kind of like take a look at some things, man, and begin to, man, like, let my mother off the hook, man. Understand she done the best she could do with what she had at that time. You know, and start praying for her and stuff like that, man. And start taking a look at some things, man. You know, it's like the little boy inside of me, man, that never grew up because I always covered up my low self-esteem, my insecurities, man, with arrogance and anger. You know? And what I'm talking about, man, is getting all right with self. Starting to get connected with self. You dig? So I started challenging, man, the self-centered fear, man, and the things that always held me hostage, man, like going on a job site, man, and jumping on the equipment and shit like that, man, and a little boy would come out and say, "Dan, you can't do that shit, no way. Just get the fuck off the equipment." You know, when the superintendent and the architects and shit be watching, man, and stuff like that. But I'm kind of talking about a self-centered fear. But what I learned is, man, my feelings ain't facts, but they fool my ass every time, right? So I began to recognize through sponsorship, man, what I was feeling. And I started challenging these feelings, man, and getting a prayer. So I'm here to report to y'all, man, since I've been here, man, I've been able to challenge the self-centered fears and stuff like that, man, and not throwing in the towel, right? And I've been able to accumulate a sheet metal card, a heavy operator equipment card, man, and a Teamster card since being here, man. You know, and at that period of time, man, you know, it was rough. And, you know, bills is doing shit like that. And I didn't get my money. I had the cards, but I didn't get the money yet. And, you know, it was a problem there in my mind. It was a problem. You know, Dean, where the plans at for the Navy Yard jobs? You know, and I was recognizing, man, how the arrogance was blocking me. You know, because in my mind, it was like, don't be asking about no Navy Yard jobs. Where's my money at? I'm talking about kind of like how the defects, man, will block me from the freedom what God got for me. Right? See, I know when the process of recovery starts, man, when I start choosing spiritual principles over defects of character, right? It was important for me, man, to kind of like surrender what I was thinking, right, and get into prayer. See, humility is not a principle I can talk, man. It's a principle I got to walk, right? So I remember, man, praying for humility, man, and walking my way into humility, man. And about 2 days later, man, they gave me a $25,000 a year raise. You know, when I first got here, man, I ain't carrying no wallet. I ain't carrying no wallet. Probably because I had warrants and shit out on me. Right? But oftentimes, man, I look at my wallet today, man, and I look at the certifications and stuff like that. And more importantly, man, I maybe look at the man in the license, right, and be all right with him. And be all right with him. You know, and even like reconnecting from the relationships, man, that I destroyed and stuff like that. And my sponsor helped me with that and said, "Dean, when you're writing your list, don't leave a whole bunch of question marks and shit like that. Take responsibility for what you've done, right, and get better with it." You know, it was like with my son's mother, man. I remember managed to get my son and shit like that, man. And we would be engaging in a conversation and I would just turn my back or give it this dumbass look, right? And oftentimes, man, harm is not what I say, it's what I don't say, you know? So I started building some esteem, man, and started being more attentive, right? And started looking in the eye, man, and started getting a solution, man, to what was going on, you dig? And just recently, man, she had a lot of shit going on in her life, man. Struggling with bills, man, getting arrested and all types of shit, right? And I go pick my son up, man, and this a few weeks ago, man, and she come out crying to me. You know what I mean? And what the program allowed me to do is not beat up with the basic text and say, "We're going to look at page 26 right now and get your ass in treatment." I think what it more or less allowed me to do, man, was hug and embrace and say, "Let's get into the solution, man, and not beat up with the past." And not try to control it, man, because the deal is, man, if I'm still powerless over my disease, how the fuck am I exerting power over hers? You know, the best thing to do is be an example of the power. You know, and even like reconnecting, man, with some people, man, I never thought I would reconnect with. You know, one day, man, my aunt called me, man, and I had a cousin that was dying of the virus, right? And I go over there and he in his deathbed. You know, and I was able to walk up to him, man, and talk to him before he died. I said, "Man, I really apologize if I offended you when I ran you off the corner." And he said, "Dean, that's all. You're making up for it right now." You know, I'm kind of talking about, man, how God has set the stage in my life, man, to reconnect with people, man, that I damaged. You know, grandmothers, mothers, and stuff like that, man. And what's important to me today, man, is my time. If you got time, I got time. And what I'm kind of like talking about, man, is if I get to the point in this process, man, where I'm actively involved in this process, man, and I ain't helping the newcomers, man, I need to take a look at some shit. You know what I mean? I hope I never get to the point in my process to where as though I act like I'm scared to hug y'all because I'm scared I'm going to catch what y'all got and I already got this shit. The disease. You know? See, if I'm in this process, man, and I'm not helping people, man, and see, I need to take a look at, man, am I reaching out to people? Am I still talking to the same people? Am I being an example of the power? You know what I mean? See, and my prayer, man, my meditation is real, real simple, man. You know what I mean? Oftentimes, man, I had to take the time out to pray, man, and get right sized and right related to the Creator, man. And what it lets me know is, man, then only by the grace of God that He put you this far in your life that you can't turn your back on nobody. See, when I came in, man, you know, the only desire was a requirement was to stop using. You know what I mean? But since I've been here, man, the picture has gotten a whole lot broader, man. It's a paradox to that shit now. I guess the question is, man, what am I doing to help somebody with their desire today? That's what I need to be asking myself. You know what I mean? So to the best of my ability, man, I try to help people get connected today, man, as I'm still getting connected. You know what I mean? And oftentimes, man, in this process, man, a lot of guys, man, they understand, man, I'm a single father, man. And a lot of guys come in my life, man, they got young kids, you know, and they ask me how you developed a relationship with your son. You know, and to the best of my ability, man, I try to show them. Whether it's taking them to the park or going out and hanging out and picking up their kids and stuff like that, man. What I'm kind of like talking about, man, is selfless service. You know, I'm clean with it, man. God ain't saved me from me, man. My story keeps me clean, man, but it's helped the next sick and suffering addict, man, who come from behind me. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Dean, for that. I'd like to introduce my next speaker, Roger.
I'm an addict named Roger. Roger. I'll give Dean a hug here. Thank you. Thank you, Roger. That was part of me getting connected. When I got here, I wasn't walking around hugging people. But today, I walk around hugging people, and I like them hugs today. I really do. I wasn't getting that out there when I was using. People weren't hugging me and giving me a hit at the same time. I wanted to read something out of something that I got connected with when I first got here, too. When I first got out of I've been through it twice. I've been through two rehabs. And the second one, after 60 days, I didn't think I was connected. I didn't get connected. I decided to go back out, and for another 8-9 years, I lived in misery until I decided to finally surrender to this program. I believe that's one of the most important things you've got to do to get connected in here, is to surrender. But I want to read something that I read out of every day for my first 3 years. I miss some now, but for the first 3 years, I read something out of this just for today, every day. I'd get up, and I had a certain spot that I went every morning in my bathroom and sat down, and this book was there, and I read out of it. You can imagine what I do there. But in the back of this book, it talks about feelings and stuff. And I didn't know a lot of times what feelings I was having. So for me, I could look in the back of this book and find out what the feelings were. And it also even gives you pages in the basic text after you read something here that you can go to so you can identify what you were feeling. Because I tried to hide my feelings. I tried to put something into me to keep me from feeling all the time. I also found out after I got in here I needed glasses. My arms got shorter. Being involved in service makes me feel more worthwhile. This is May 1st. When most of us arrive in Narcotics Anonymous, we had very little self-worth left to salvage. Many members say that we began to develop self-esteem through being of service early in their recovery. Sometimes just a short miracle occurs when we begin to have a positive impact on others' lives through our service efforts. Most of us don't have a lot of experience, strength, or hope to share at 30 Days Clean. In fact, some members will tell us in no certain terms that we can do as best as listen. But at 30 Days, we do have something to offer to the addict just coming into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, struggling to get 24 hours clean. The very newest NA member, the one with only the desire to stop using and none of the tools, can hardly imagine anyone staying clean for a year or two or 10. But he or she can relate to those people with 30 Days Clean. Picking up a key tag with a look of pride and disbelief embossed on their face, service is something that is a unique gift, something that no one can take away from us. We give and get. Through service, many of us start to on some time long road back to becoming productive members of society. And for me, that was kind of an important thing to read, you know, because I remember the first meeting that I did was at a rehab. It was down in Cambridge, and I had 90 days clean, and the sponsor that I had at the time said, well, you need to do this meeting. And I said, well, I don't have nothing. You know, I'm new here. What do they want to hear that I've got? Because I didn't have any self-worth. And when I went down there and walked into that rehab, I felt like I was a bigger and better person because I was with these other three people that had a little bit of time, and I looked at these people sitting in this rehab, and they didn't have any time. They just got there. And I remember being in that rehab 90 days earlier, feeling the same way that they felt and looking the same way that they did. And all of a sudden, I felt like I had something to share. I could tell them how to stay clean for 90 days because I had done 90 days and got my first 90 days clean. And to me, that was a real powerful, you know, start of my recovery. It's what started getting me connected and learning about service. To me, coming in here and hearing about war stories, when people talk about their war stories, where they come from, I hear people get up here now that's got a lot of time, and they say, I don't want to give out a drug-a-log. I don't believe it's a drug-a-log. I was taught when I got in here to share my experience, strengths, and hopes. Part of my using past was my experience. If I hadn't heard people in here sharing their own experiences, I wouldn't have stuck around. I'd have said, F you, you're not like me, you didn't come from where I came from, and you don't know who I am. But I heard people sharing here. I was beat up enough, and I was able to identify in enough, listening for the similarities of what people spoke about in here with their stories. Because I didn't know nothing about recovery. When I first got here, recovery, what you all were talking about, the ones that had time, talking about recovery, I was clueless. You talked about feelings. You talked about a lot of things that I didn't have any clues about. But I did understand when you talked about those stories of where you came from and what you did and how it made you feel. Because I could identify with that. I didn't have any clean time, but I had the same feelings that I had and the same patterns of using and doing those things. So then I started realizing that you had the same things I had and that I could identify with you. Then I was able to start connecting with Narcotics Anonymous and believing in this program and what's going on in this program. How many of you, is this your first convention? You know, this was my first convention in 03, a new beginning. And for me, it truly was a new beginning. I remember how excited I got when I got here. I came down here with some people who had some clean time. You couldn't set me down. I was running around this place. I was just like when I was using, you know, I was just running around. I wanted to stay up all night. I wanted to go to every meeting I could go to. The old timers, they were saying, we're going back to the room. So if you show up, you show up, you know. And I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave this place. I felt connected here. I felt like I belonged here. And with all these addicts running around here and all these people, I was excited. I really got excited. And I love coming to these conventions and seeing people because I feel connected here. I feel like I'm at home when I'm with you people. It's like sharing this meeting. I go through periods of feeling like I was nervous, but I always know in the back of my mind today, I've got a little over 5 years clean, that I'm around people that are just like me. A bunch of thieves, drug addicts, liars, y'all are just like me. And I feel comfortable today. I don't feel like I've got to hide as much. I feel like I've got more self-worth. And that's only through doing things here in Narcotics Anonymous and becoming connected with Narcotics Anonymous. The things I did to get connected were things that I was told when I first got here. Get a home group. Get a sponsor. Get into service. I believe service was one of the most important things that I got into. When I first got here, I got a service commitment over in Cambridge, Maryland, and I'd have to drive from Kent Island to Cambridge, and I did that commitment for every Thursday for over a year and a half. That included Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving comes on a Thursday. But to me, it was important. I had to go to a six-hour orientation to get this commitment, but I got more out of that commitment than those people in there do. I do jail commitments. I still do H&I. I was a chair for special events. I've done a lot of services. I've been here, and I've only gained from it. I don't believe that I do those things today for Narcotics Anonymous as much as I do it for myself to stay clean. When I go into those jails, I get something out of it. Maybe nobody in there does, but I do. I get another day clean, and I've become more connected and feel more comfortable with me and with Narcotics Anonymous. Like I said, that commitment I had in Cambridge, when I'd leave Kent Island and drive 45 minutes, I'd get speakers from the other side, and I'd always try to find people that I really respected or liked how they sounded or liked how they spoke, and I wanted to get to know them. So we'd ride 45 minutes from Kent Island to Cambridge. I'd have a meeting on the way to the meeting, a meeting there, and then a meeting on the way back from the meeting. And I believe that was a very, very important part of my recovery in the beginning, that little service commitment, because I got to learn so much from other people. Because when I was here at first, I didn't feel comfortable hanging around with the old-timers or people who had time. I've come to believe now that they got the same problems we do. I've got 5 years. The ones that's got 20, 15, 25, they got the same problems I do. And for a long time, I thought that they were up here, higher than me and a little better than me. So I kind of wanted to stay away from them. You know, I kind of shied away. I didn't want them to let them know where I was at exactly because I was scared to be looked at as lower. But after hanging with them and getting to know them now, I realized they got the same problems we got, even with clean time. I always thought that life was supposed to be just this even, you know, that spiritual thing, you know, the Buddha does or whatever. And that's not it. A friend of mine told me, that's dead. That's flatline. Life is up and down. You have to have up and down. When you go down, you're going to grow from it. You're going to learn. It makes the top parts even that much greater. And I've learned that's the way life is. And I learned how to deal with things better. Coming through Narcotics Anonymous has taught me how to deal with life a lot better. I'm able to reach out and ask for help today. At first, I didn't want to ask for help. I enjoyed letting other people ask for help from me, and I enjoyed helping other people, but I didn't enjoy letting other people help me. I was scared to ask for help. I come from a military family. My dad was military. I was military. The word surrender and help and things like that, they weren't things I was raised with or around. I was always raised to be a man. You stood up, you did what you were supposed to do, and took care of it yourself. In Narcotics Anonymous, I've learned by getting connected to you people that I can ask for help. And then when I ask you for help, it allows you to help me. It gives you that same good feeling that I get when I help you. And Bobby taught me that one. Because she was telling me I was selfish, and I kept saying, what do you mean I'm selfish? I like to help people. I like giving people things. You're being selfish because you're not allowing other people to get that same good feeling when you allow them to help you. Now, it's these little that's what I call my little spiritual awakenings when I learn things from people. And I believe I heard my grand sponsor speak at a convention about 2 months ago. He's from Hawaii, and he spoke about getting into Narcotics Anonymous. When you first get here, you need to take. Because we don't have anything to give, a lot to give, when we first get here. So when you first get here, I believe you actually need to take and take and take. And when you start getting these things inside, then you have more things to offer. And he said, once you get so full inside that if you're going to stay here, you're going to have to start giving it away. And basically, that's working to the last step anyway. The 12th step's about giving it away. And that's basically what the goal that I believe we're all working for. Today, the God that I have, he's an awesome God. The God I had before I got here was this one that I believed I was going to burn in hell. There was no way that I was ever going to get out of it. I just believed that I was doomed for the rest of my life. And that's actually the way I thought I was going to live the rest of my life. I was going to die, and I was going to the ultimate hell, even though I was living in a hell most of the time anyway. But I believed that, you know, that's the God that I had. He wasn't forgiving. He was the one that was causing all my problems. He was the one that was getting me caught. He was the one that was torturing me for everything I was doing. Today I've got this God that is so loving that he allows me to do anything that I want to do. I could go rob banks if I want to, and my God still loves me. But the thing is, I've got to pay the consequences for my actions. When I go do something bad, I get consequences. Those are consequences that I create. It's not God punishing me. He loves me so much that he allows me the free will to go test those waters. But when I do the right thing, too, I also reap the rewards of doing the right things. I get the good feeling inside. I've never had the feeling that I've had here since I've got clean with the emotional feelings I get. I can cry pretty much at the drop of a hat anymore. You know, if I watch a good movie, I can start crying. I think about my father up in Arlington. I was in jail when he died. And it's very emotional for me, and I can really feel it today. I never felt these feelings like I feel inside today. It's so deep, I can't even explain sometimes the feeling that I get in here. But I know that there's other people in Narcotics Anonymous that I've met and that I talk to, they get those same feelings. To me, it's amazing to be able to do this, to be able to get up here and speak. When I went to my first convention, I saw people doing this, and I said, that ain't never going to be me. I'm not going to be there on that. To me, this is a miracle to be able to stand up here, to be asked to even be able to do this. Because my disease still tells me that I don't have anything to give and I need to shut up and sit down. And it still tells me that. But I do know today that I am worth more than that because you people help tell me that. And that's what being connected to Narcotics Anonymous has done for me. There's certain things I believe you have to do. It's like if you want to go get high, you got to do certain steps. So I equate Narcotics Anonymous to the same thing as getting high. I've actually got to do the reverse. If you're going to get high, you can't just go fill the bowl and not light it. Can't light the bowl without putting something in it. So you all had to do something to get high. There were certain steps to getting high. In Narcotics Anonymous, to stay here and to stay clean, I believe you have to do certain steps in here to stay clean. What they suggest in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm not able to pick and choose. When I'm asked or told to do something, most of the time I try to do it. I may procrastinate on it for a while because I do have a problem with procrastination. But these are all things that I'm working on. I'm allowed to work on here in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm glad I'm not God, and I'm glad I don't believe I'm perfect. And I don't believe anybody ever graduates from this program. I believe it's a program of continuance, one that you can keep doing from day to day, every day. Some days I don't do it so well. Some days I do it better. But I like who I am a lot better today. I don't know what else to say about Narcotics Anonymous except for I really love it, and I think it's a great program. And I'll keep coming back.
Thanks for sharing.
We do have some time left. Would anybody like to come up and share?
My name is Matt, and I'm a recovering addict.
Matt.
I wanted to come up and share this meeting because I might not never see one of these conventions again. For me, my life took a serious change June 7th of last year. I was in the penitentiary. I'd been in prison for 14 years. During that time, I had went through the gamut of doing crazy things while inside the walls. And one of the things I learned while I was inside those walls is I learned how to become a junkie. I put a needle in my arm for the first time. I got involved with all the prison politics and all the crap that goes on inside those walls. Little did I know that 13 years later, they would be calling me into medical and telling me that I have an inoperable brain tumor and that I was dying and that my time would be 6 months to a year. I remember standing in that doctor's office and the reality hadn't really set in because I was still cold and hard. I looked at him because they were trying to tell me like they were my friends or something. I'd been telling them for 13 years that something was wrong with me. So I walked out of there, didn't even let them finish their explanation. All I know is that a few months later, a few of the staff who had a lot of love and respect for me appealed to the governor and got me what they call a compassion release. And I was pardoned by the governor so that I could come out here and I could die on the streets. I made a decision at that point that I was going to come out here and I was going to party it up and do all the other stuff that basically I wanted to do. And then there was a reality that came to me during the time that I didn't even know. This was before I was getting ready to get out. And I was on this spiritual journey. I was seeking for something that I didn't know what it was, and I knew it was greater than me. And I discovered my spiritual path, and I discovered my higher power. And during that time, I still was lost, confused, and scared to death. I wasn't so much scared of dying as I was scared that I would be incapacitated before I would die. So I walked out of those prison gates, not exactly knowing what I was going to do. I was very young when I went to prison. I'm 33 now. So I really didn't understand how to live out here. I still don't. I walk into these meetings, and I walk into groups of people. I try to go to this dance over here, and I'm, like, lost. I have no idea what's going on. I get a new phone. It takes me a month to figure out how to even, like, send a text message or something. I just don't understand nothing out here. I don't understand how to communicate with people. I don't understand how to have loving relationships. I don't understand how to trust somebody or even trust myself. Because the only thing I know I can trust is how to get angry and how to turn that anger into rage and hurt everybody around me and destroy everything that's coming at me. I never in life have left a place that I didn't leave a trail of destruction until recently. I just came from Las Vegas, and I moved out to Maryland. I didn't leave a trail of destruction in Las Vegas, and there was one reason why. Because I made a decision in my life that I would stay in recovery, that I would be clean, and that I wouldn't live the last of my life in benefit of me, that I would do things in service for others. Because I was banking on that hope, that faith, that chance, that my higher power might grant me a little more time than what I had before. You know, we all know what month this is. My year is almost here. I feel more healthy, more strong, and more satisfied, serene and content with myself and my life. I have my moments. I'm still self-centered, self-seeking, and an asshole. I don't get along with people very well. I don't connect. But I try. I stood at the doors in Las Vegas and did everything that I never did in this program before. I shook hands. I smiled. I gave hugs, and I introduced myself. And in a very short period of time, I had put people in my life and people had come into my life that opened doors for me and opportunities. Las Vegas is way too fast for someone like me. So I made a decision after I left the rich, wealthy girlfriend who owned three of her own companies and had paid for my apartment. It was $1,300 a month and so forth and so on. I told her, look, you're just not for me, because she was just like me. No one else in her life mattered but her. I got rid of all the fake friends. I shaved my hair. I had long hair down to here. The ladies loved it. It was time for it to go because it was all ego. And I called a good friend of mine out here in Maryland who I met in Las Vegas when he was traveling, and he offered me an opportunity before he left. And he said, man, I got this horse ranch out here and I got a safe haven on my ranch for addicts and alcoholics. He says, man, if you ever get the inkling maybe that you want to come check it out, come check it out. And he invited me to this convention. I got on a plane this last Monday with only two bags of my designer-ass clothes that don't mean nothing no more, and I was seeking my dream, because my only dream for 14 years in prison was to live in the wilderness and to be around real people. And I found that real people weren't all them people that I thought were out there that I thought I would be cool for and be, you know, shucking jive for, but it was the people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because they've embraced me. They don't care the fact that I'm dying, and in fact, there's not very many of them that remind me of that. They always remind me, you know what, your higher power might do things in your life that might change that because of all the work you're doing and the work that you're doing in your life to change where you're going. You need to be out here, share your story. Share where you've been and what you've done. I went to prison for 14 years for level one trafficking. I went in prison and started doing the same thing while I was in there. I went through riots. I hurt people. You know, I've been hurt. My nose been broke three times because I'm a little guy. And I'm like them little dogs, you know, them little chihuahuas, right, that just think they badass. You know, they got their little yaps and they bark like big dogs. Well, I have that problem too. Well, I did. There was something I learned June 7th of last year, and it was called humility, because in an instant, everything that I thought I was no longer mattered. I still come to meetings, and I still always will consider myself a newcomer, because every day I wake up, I have to remember that that's just that day I'm living. It's moment to moment, because every day I think about this. There's a song by Seether, and it's called Fine Again, and there's a line in that song that says, why should I stay sober if I'm dying? And there's a reason for it, because I can stand here in these rooms like this and talk to other addicts and go into treatment centers and go to different places that I did in Vegas. You know, I worked with a recovery program out there called Sober Living Las Vegas. And during my time working with Sober Living Las Vegas, I must every day have talked to over 100 to 150 distraught, scared, lonely, and dying, sick addicts who all they wanted was someone to reach out and extend their hand and help them. And that was a realization that I'm doing the right thing. I have my moments, you know. I was in this dance earlier, and I was, like, so lost and confused. I got all these people running around me, and I'm, like, freaking out, right? I'm like, whoa, what am I going to do? And then it dawned on me, I'm going to freaking NA convention. Go to a damn meeting. So that's what I did. I come in here, and I sought out a meeting. You know what I mean? But the reason I want to get up here and share with you all about my story is because, you know, I hope to see, you know, many of y'all's faces maybe this time next year. I'm hoping that I make it again, you know, this long. But I wanted to share that little bit of my story and say that after all the life I lived, I never in life would have thought I'd been standing up here with a tie and some slacks and some nice little pimp-ass shoes in an NA convention. After all the things I've done and places I've been, I was for sure that when I walked out of prison, I'd be shot dead in the street or somewhere stuck with a needle in my arm. And I'm not doing any of that. I'm up in here talking to y'all tonight. And thanks for letting me share.